Good morning, Auroville. This is Abhijit with you again, broadcasting from Auroville Radio. And I'm back with my series on exploring education in arts, animation, and filmmaking. Today, I bring you the concluding episode of animation, where I've been talking about the birth of an art form. And in the last episode for this topic, I dwell into Walt Disney. So Walt was basically a communicator, and in the animated film, he found astounding potential for expressing his ideas. The cartoon drawing always had been a very simple and direct graphic form, and whether it was the social comment or just amusement, it had to present a unified single idea with nothing complicated, extraneous, or contradictory in its makeup. When the cartoon was transferred to film, these elements still applied, and nothing was drawn that was not part of the idea. Backgrounds, costumes, characters, and expressions were all designed for a succinct statement. Behind the character, there was only a horizon, or a house, or a rock to run into, but that was all. To include only objects that were needed for the idea became the basis for a language of the drawing for film. Walt took to this naturally, and if any of his staff introduced something wrong or confusing or vague, he was quick to notice and to educate the offender. Walt gradually added the more sophisticated graphic symbols of acting and presenting complicated ideas that had to be understood very quickly. They used to indicate how successfully drawings communicated these thoughts by saying that they either read or didn't read. John Hench, one of Walt's most gifted artists, said, and I'm quoting, "We don't really know how much we learned here about using images to communicate to develop a kind of visual literacy," end quote. At the time, none of them thought of these terms or stopped long enough to gain perspective on what was happening. The language of imagery was emerging as a separate art form of its own, requiring skills and disciplines different from those of related crafts. Not every artist could master the demands, and most failed to realize that they were involved in something quite different and exacting. I quote John again, "I think this is a little hard for people to understand. The fact that you are developing a kind of language, and a very precise one. They figure that graphics are not precise at all. They are just sort of decorative. They are pleasant to look at, and they are aesthetic, instead of understanding what the basic thing is about the image. I don't know how else anyone could get this except in motion pictures, and particularly in cartoons. You sure don't get it in any art school," end quote. It is impossible to judge the films that were made or the animation that was done or even what is worth preserving in the methods that were used without an understanding of this language of imagery that spoke so clearly from the screen. Not drawings by themselves or paintings or isolated antics, but the visual symbols of communication. When the outstanding violinist Isaac Stern was asked the difference between the great and the truly great, he replied, start quote, "The ability to communicate," end quote. It is the key ingredient in every art form and certainly the great strength of Walt Disney's genius. Walt was also a gambler when it mattered most. If he believed in an idea, he would risk absolutely everything to get it before the public. But he was also practical enough to work with what he had rather than wait for what he wished he had. He would say, begin quote, "I don't know if it's art, but I know I like it," end quote. He felt intuitively that if he liked it, the rest of the world would like it too, if only he could find the right way to present it. Walt had relentless nature and never liked to do the same thing twice. As he said of himself, begin quote, "I can never stand still. I must explore and experiment. I am never satisfied with my work. I resent the limitations of my own imagination," end quote. Where others felt lucky if they could hang on to what they had, Walt was constantly searching for new ways, better ways, and especially ways that his small group of artists could handle. As many of them agreed in the later years, begin quote, "One of Walt's greatest gifts was his ability to get you to come up with things you didn't know you were in you, and that you had have sworn you couldn't possibly do," end quote. As the audience response verified Walt's convictions about entertainment, he was able to fight for better contracts that brought in little more money. Now he could begin to add to his staff men who had been better trained and artists who had a greater variety of talents. The Depression had just begun, and young artists were faced with a bleak future, if any at all, in the commercial fields. The only two places for employment were the government-financed WPA and Disney's. In 10 years, the studio went from the raw vitality and crude, clumsy actions of Steamboat Willie to the surprising sophistication and glowing beauty of Snow White. Together, they at the Disney studio had discovered many things about communicating with an audience. They are still to learn much more. They continue to experiment with many approaches to filmmaking and different uses of animation, from stop motion with cutouts, limited movement, stylized design, puppets, and even 3D, to the full cell animation. Whatever the method, the pictures that got the biggest response in theaters were always the ones that achieved audience involvement by telling definite stories through rich personalities. It had begun with Mickey and Pluto, a cartoon boy and his dog, who appeared to think and suggested the spirit of life. Then the Silly Symphonies portrayed the emotions in their characters, and there had been a feeling of life. Finally, in the telling of feature-length tales about specific characters who were convincingly real, the full illusion of life was achieved. The illusion of life is a rare accomplishment in animation, and at that time it was never really mastered anywhere except the Disney studios. Of all the characters and stories and exciting dimensions of entertainment to come from that incubator of ideas, this is truly a unique achievement. That is what must be examined and explained, understood and appreciated, taught to others and passed on to the animators of the future. It came from new ways of thinking, ways of making a drawing, ways of relating drawings to each other, all the refinements in this language of imagery. But it also came from the new ways of looking at stories. Theirs were not written down in the usual way. They were drawn, because a few stimulating pictures could suggest far more about the potential entertainment of an episode than any number of pages of words. More than that, their stories were kept flexible until long after the first animation had been done. Often a whole new character would appear from nowhere and take over the story. When they started Snow White, there was no Dopey in the cast. Pinocchio had no Jiminy Cricket, and Bambi had no Thumper. All of these characters evolved as the picture developed. As Walt said, begin quote, "The best things in many of our pictures have come after we thought the story was thoroughly prepared. Sometimes we don't really get close to our personalities until the story is in animation," end quote. It was never too late to make a change. Nothing was ever set as long as the possibility existed that it could be made to relate better to the overall picture or communicate more strongly with the audience. They struggled to build interesting, appealing characters, but most of all, they worked to find ways to make the audience feel the emotions of the animated figures, emotions the audience could relate to, identify with, and become involved in. All of this took study and desire and knowledge and inspiration and months of selection and building. But that is true of any artistic accomplishment, however great it might be. Fine works have never been achieved easily, nor without the exercise of constant critical judgment. That is why the world's greatest mime, Marcel Marceau, said of his own work, and I'm quoting, "It takes years of study. You can't just walk out on the stage and do it," end quote. Marcel Marceau also said that his teacher, Etienne Decreau, had told him that the principles of communication with an audience were the same ones in use 2,000 years ago. They had been handed down from teacher to student ever since. The entertainer's symbols that bring audience identification and arouse sympathetic feelings, as well as techniques used to portray emotions to please, to excite, to captivate, and to entertain, have always been known by some. At Disney's, they learned them painfully and slowly by trial and error. Although they had the greatest of leaders, he was not strictly a teacher. Still, by learning the rules this way, they learned them thoroughly, and sometimes they thought they may have added a few footnotes of their own to the historic lore of the theater. Most of their work has been in only one small part of the vast field of animation. There are so many areas to be explored, drawings to be tried, emotions to be captured, effects to be created, new wonders to be seen. It is an exciting prospect. With new digital aids being perfected and tools and materials being used, who can possibly foresee what lies ahead? It probably will not be another Walt Disney who will lead the way, but someone or some group of artists will surely discover new dimensions to delight and entertain the world. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you for tuning in.
This is Auroville Radio, voices from the City of Dome.